Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing well. Today, we have an exciting guest on our show today, and Jasmine, why don't you go ahead and tell us all about her?
All right. Joining us today on My Old Kentucky Podcast is Representative Kelly Flood, a member of the Kentucky House of Representatives. Her district is the 75th district, which covers much of downtown Lexington, the University of Kentucky, and some of that surrounding community, as well as some areas of southwest Fayette County. She's represented the 75th district since 2009, and a fun fact, Representative Flood is the only member of the Kentucky House who both Robert and I have voted for. So that's the only time we've lived in the same district, and we both got to vote for Representative Flood. So thank you so much for joining us on My Old Kentucky Podcast.
It is truly a pleasure to be here. I appreciate your past support, and truly in this time, I really am glad to be on the show.
Well, we appreciate it as well. So Representative Flood, tell us a little bit about your start in politics. Why did you decide to run for office? Was this like a lifelong desire, or was there something specific that created your desire to serve?
Both things are true. I had wanted to run for office when I was completing college and contemplating going to law school. And I had thought at that time I would go to law school and then run for office as a younger person. It was a definite draw. But on my way to that whole plan, I ended up getting a call to ministry. We can come back to that, but became a Unitarian Universalist minister instead of going to law school. I went to seminary. And where I'll tell you, I decided to run for office, though, after serving in the parish for a decade and then serving my larger faith tradition for another decade, I got a call a summer of 08 from Deborah Hensley, who is an important person here in our local community for all kinds of activism and past elected leadership. And Deborah said that Ernesto Scorsone had been appointed a judge by then Governor Beshear, and that Kathy Stein, was going to become the senator. He appointed her to fill that term that Scorsone had left, and that there was going to be a post primary election, in other words, just a general election for the 75th state representative seat. And she was assisting putting together a short list of names of people who local leaders would like to see run. And I was on that list, and was I interested? And I was down in vacation, really, at a conference too, and called my husband. I said, I'll call you right back, Deborah. But let me just say the short version is, I do want to do this, but I need you to know that this is really drawing back on an old dream of mine, and I need to talk to Neil. And my husband did what he always does at these core moments in our 30 years of being together. He knew this was an old dream of mine. And I said, Neil, I think this might be the moment to do this window of opportunity. And he said, yeah, sure. I think you're right. So about 10 minutes later, I called Denver back and said, I'm in.
So as a follow-up to that, can you tell us what it was that, in your opinion, Ms. Hensley thought about you that made her think of you to put onto that short list?
There were a number of reasons why this seat mattered. With a legacy of Judge Scorsone and Kathy Stein, both of whom were firsts, Judge Scorsone, the first gay man, also Kathy Stein, who was the first Jewish woman to run. And I believe at that point, not the first woman to have held the seat, the 75th, but the first who was Jewish. So those two dynamics, and then, of course, what a remarkable advocate they both were for many things, but specifically for gay and lesbian people throughout the state. And that clarion legislative advocacy for gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgendered people became something that the district leadership felt important to continue. As a Unitarian Universalist minister in the state and in Lexington, I had become an advocate early on. My faith tradition was, but very specifically, I had done lots of union ceremonies before it was legal for many, many, many gay couples across the state. And that was a way that I knew I could continue now in a legislative way to bring the real life needs of people who happen to be gay, who wanted to form families and have marriages and live normal lives.
And I think that goes right into our next question. Like you said, you're a minister in the Unitarian Universalist Church. Talk a little bit more about how your faith and your public service intersect with one another. What do you think is the best way for religion and politics to coexist?
First of all, it's imperative that we all understand why the constitutional divide, which is there very clearly between the separation of church and state, be such a backbone of how we do democracy. Because the tendency again and again when there is a any sort of blessing of church by the state, especially around money, public money, is that we tend to do favorites. You just have to look now and see, I don't need to point out, people can do their own research, but there are favorite faiths for most states.
Right.
And then you can find it out by just seeing who's benefiting directly. So follow the money. That dynamic is what we need to avoid. But what we don't need to avoid is having our faith inform our activism. It's imperative as well that anybody active in politics today come from a grounded place of ethical and moral stature, because it's lost right now in our dialogue, especially what I think Unitarian Universalists bring to the civic dialogue is exactly that. We has for over 500 years valued tolerance as the heart of our religious work together. We recognize that other faith exists. We've always been a small liberal faith tradition.
Right.
So we never expected to lead the entire discourse, though we've had significant leaders in our faith tradition. So it matters to know how to tolerate. Too often we want acceptance from one another, and God knows I value accepting one another deeply. But tolerance is how we live side by side with one another and just put up with one another when we profoundly disagree. We create a common space of tolerance where we allow our differences to abide one another. And I think that's an incredible frame for these days when most would have us dividing and fighting one another.
Thank you so much for that answer. It's such an interesting one. And I think faith in politics is such a dicey issue for many people. And the UU Church is so interesting to me. I attend a liberal Baptist church, and most people say we're wannabe Unitarian Universalists already. I just really like your answer. That was great.
Absolutely. Well, let me say, you probably know this, but there are two strains, or that's quite the word, but traditions in baptism. And American Baptists have very, very strong ties to early Unitarian and Universalists in our nation's formings.
That's always surprising to lots of people to hear, for sure.
Well, and just people need to remember there's also then the Southern Baptists have a whole different tradition.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes, that's absolutely true as well. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about you and your seat and your work in the legislature. So you serve in the 75th District. We've already talked about that. And that's, you know, one of the safest Democratic seats in maybe the whole state. Your closest election during the five elections you stood for was the most recent one in 2016, when you received only 61% of the vote. One of the things that I think I actually heard this from you once upon a time was that the 75th district is the conscience of the House. So do you feel a responsibility to put forth a progressive platform, like a positive platform about what progressives believe and what progressive governance in Kentucky could look like? Is that kind of exercise useful in you know, a government that's totally controlled by the Republicans right now?
Very good question. Let me answer it this way. First, when it wasn't that long ago when I was in the majority party, and at that time, while I, if you looked at my voting record, would see it solidly a progressive, I felt it very important to position myself to advance not just file legislation, but to advance progressive ideals where critical decisions were being made. And in my book, that's always where the money's being doled out. I made it a priority to keep my head down and said with a light touch to keep my mouth a little more tightly closed and work behind the scenes to get onto the budget committee and then become a chair of the budget subcommittee on pre-K through 12 education. Once I got there, Then I knew my seat was secure as that chair. Then I felt more relaxed, if you will, to speak up. Okay, so that was how I strategically moved then and impacted that budget in the 4 years when I could, significantly with progressive values and advancing public education. Now, however, as a minority member, it's critical to completely change that and step up my game, and game is a phrasing, to step up my work in speaking up publicly, filing legislation regardless of it's going to be or not, because this is an opportunity, and in fact, it's the only chance I have to advance progressive values is with my voice and with my actions through legislative endeavor.
That's interesting, and it's a little bit of a, I don't know, if it's not necessarily a conflict, but it's a little bit of a different strategy than has been taken, you know, by Representative Stein and then Senator Stein afterwards, who was much more of a, I don't know, is bomb thrower an accurate term in the way that she operated in the legislature. It's an interesting phrasing, and it's nice to hear you say that. And I think that that's an important strategy to take, and you see many people taking it now. That's a good answer. So another question about your district. So I don't...
Let me put out there the piece about if ever a lobber who could land it, it was Senator Stein.
Oh,
and
that
is, you know what I'm saying. She now as a judge has a different role. The... that I, once I figured out that the money was where the real decisions were being made, I didn't feel that trying to match, no one could ever match Stein do what she did, right?
No.
So what the only thing that mattered now was to ensure that I left a continuing legacy of impact, because she had an impact, so did Scorsone. And look, let's go back just a moment for everyone to understand the power of the 75th district. I didn't just come up with conscience of the House because it felt good. This is the same seat that Henry Clay held. Mm-hmm. It's a larger district back then, but at the heart of it was Henry Clay's law office, which is in the heart of my district now. And he had it then and was known for his oratorical and ethical drive, whether you agreed with him or not, this man brought his impact to the table. This is also where we had, from the bluegrass, one of the only speakers of the House whose name just flew out of my mind. That's middle age. It'll come back to me. But one of the speakers of the 75th district here, and his wife served after he died in office. So what matters to understand is the 75th district had a legacy of an impact, especially when we had a speaker doing the good work that he did. Kenton.
Okay.
Kenton.
Yeah,
Speaker Kenton.
Okay.
Yes. Let me get it right.
Was he the one that they might have named the county after him in Northern Kentucky? I don't know. They do that.
Yeah, I just know that I want to get that right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
It's certainly an important district, and there's been a lot of history that's gone on there. And one of the reasons, and this kind of rolls into our next one, is because it's the seat that includes the University of Kentucky. So I don't necessarily have specific numbers to back this up, but I think that your district has the most students of any district in the entire state. Is it a challenge with a district that is so transient? You know, there's people that are there and that are gone. You know, every 4 years, people are moving in and moving out. How do you advocate for people like that? And not just that, but they're from all across the state in many instances. There's people coming from every corner of the state to attend the University of Kentucky, and you're their representative. So can you tell us a little bit about how that works?
Given what's going on right now across our state in college basketball in UK is the heart of the nation's college basketball love affair. For many of us, for all of us, but for many, many people across the country, one way I advocate on behalf of the students is to protect the university's core work to serve them, mm-hmm. right? That here we are at a time when athletics has grown larger than life. It matters to know that as for it is for me, such a passion for many, but we must stay vigilant in ensuring that the university is protected as well, and its reputation and the quality of education we expect from a premier university like UK in these times when obviously something's afoot, corrupting influences are afoot in big basketball. So one thing I'm doing currently is to have gotten requested and have received the contracts of the U of L and the UK's significant contracts with Adidas and with Nike, and taking a very close look to ensure that While it's evident reputations of the companies have been thought well about and thought through clearly, that the universities are protected in many instances, the one thing I need to make sure in looking at these contracts as I plan in the weeks ahead is that the any reason why the university would be in trouble with the NCAA having to do with these companies, that the universities would be protected. Sure. Because that's what matters to me now, is that we not have corporations who, because they have handed money over, feel that they own the programs. These are still public universities, and it's imperative that we, in spite of the fact that our public dollars have dwindled over the years, and I think that's not the way we need to be moving, but that's another debate for another day. These are public universities, and we need to protect them from profiteering businesses that have gotten out of hand, potentially.
Mm-hmm. How often do you intersect with the students at the university as part of your work as a legislator?
Okay, good, good. Let me get right back to sure. what I think you're asking more there. Last week, I went and visited with the Young Democrats for an evening and connected there. Of course, if the Young Republicans asked because they wanted another perspective, I go. You know what I
sure,
mean.
Sure, absolutely.
But the other group that's invited me this week, I go tomorrow evening, is the United Nations group on campus. There are myriad ways that the university students and I connect, especially I've shown up for several demonstrations that have been led by the students over the years. You know, times I've walked over to the university and stood with them while they've done their good work. What matters, though, for me in recognizing that the students, what matters more is that they recognize their need to vote back home. Mm-hmm. And that's really a message I've tried to deliver. If you didn't count on any of votes by the students, I often wanted, though, to make sure they felt included and active and that I valued their activism and made sure the party was reaching out to youngest and doing voter drives, which both parties in the state have actually done a terrific job on our UK campus of doing voter drives. So I think that work has mm-hmm. gone on. I've been supportive. That matters to me is that the students know values the university and also take seriously having a critical eye as well, right? You've got to love and then hold them accountable to standards to protect the well-being of the school.
That's a great answer.
I frame my work up.
That's a worthwhile thing to think about. I know that's a struggle for a lot of students as to whether or not they want to vote at home or you know only just go down the street to vote, which is sometimes more convenient. But yeah, it's important to think through all of that when you're making a decision.
I want to make a case for students to vote at home this year.
Uh-huh.
Because they know their voices are where many of the more decision-making goes on. And we need to keep a balance of Democrats and Republicans right now at the local level.
Yeah.
Hashing it out, having to make it's going to make us a stronger state in the long run.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And a lot of those rural votes coming to, or you know, votes from out in the state, not necessarily rural, but votes from out in the state coming to Lexington, it's important to make sure that, you know, their voice is heard and the place that they're only away from for a temporary time. So that's absolutely true. Yeah. So something that is a little bit more specific is that a bill to address the pension system is apparently forthcoming. I said that last week. It still didn't come out. Yeah. Many legislators have brought up the need for more revenue. There's a big debate about whether that needs to be handled in the same session or a different session. We really still don't really have much of an answer about how that's going to work. But there's lots of ideas floating around for increasing revenue that people have put forth, like, you know, casino gambling is one, legalization and regulation of marijuana, some things that seem to be totally off the table, but many Democrats often shy away from them because they're too controversial anyway. As somebody who is in a really safe district, how do you address issues like these that seem a little hot for some people, but might be a good idea and have proven to be, you know, real winners in other states?
Let me be clear. I do think that regulation at least of medical marijuana would be such a wise way for our state to move, given that so many states now are moving in that direction. There's a lot of entrepreneurial energy there. And just as importantly, the science, because I've never understood why the Republicans have been afraid to study this drug, because more doctors that I have had interviews with as medical marijuana has become more important across the state have said that this is really a step down drug, not a step up. And it's one that could help enormous amounts of people struggling, not only for its medical properties, but also coming down off of the opiates that our population's been on. I really think that we need to keep that as a healthy yes, going forward. Recreational marijuana, in my judgment, in the state will be years in the making because we just are such a conservative state overall. So I try to take a real practical approach, but I think that we have a very strong argument for medical marijuana and ought to be leading.
Do you think that if Democrats took a more aggressive stance on that issue, that it would win among their constituencies? Or do you think that, you know, that Democrats really are following their districts when they're shying away from that issue?
That is a question I would love to see polled.
Sure.
And believe that you could, except really polling these days is so cool. Yeah. So I'm not sure that's the best way to do it. But let me tell you this, that idea perhaps ought to be challenged and played out, because I think Democrats looking at future races, especially potentially for governorship down the way, might entertain that. I do.
You were going to follow up with another.
Other thing I'm on is casino gambling. You can go and look at my record. I voted for casino. But now I see that it's short-term. It has corrupting influences in long haul. Now that we've got Red Mile so well and Keeneland's doing what it, I just don't think bringing in more. In other words, I'm not morally against gambling. What I am not for is more short-term dollars. Mm-hmm. I want to see some long-term investments, again, specifically in education. And that is why where I'm looking for funding, because I intend to file bills coming up and bring up revenue. I'm going to be speaking to educators across the state about how to speak about money to legislators, because we have got to just make the case again. The Republicans have forgotten how to speak to one another about shared investment. Mm-hmm. If all the data show that I have read of late, because I've been looking into this, it's the theory of the economist who just won the Nobel of nudging people toward behaviors you want, right? So you can nudge people back toward taxing again for the right reasons, as long as they know exactly where it's going and why it's going there. And I do think most taxes need to have, well, for lack of a better word, a drop dead date, but you know what I mean? It phases out after 10 years, unless you can show that it's working and everybody agrees and this is why we said we would do it and let's keep going. I think if we got people used to committing again together and began to tone down the rhetoric of the Republican that has really lost their moral compass, you can't find a reason why a Republican would decide to raise money. If you really can't find a reason anymore, then you've lost your imagination, because people are dying due to the lack of funding. It's gotten ridiculous to talk about cuts again and not understand how many lives are on the line.
That's absolutely true. And I think making the case is something that we haven't done a lot in the past, and working more towards that is something we absolutely should do.
And finally, the next General Assembly is coming up soon. This will be the first budget session with the GOP in full control. So last year, we saw some major legislation that has been on the GOP to-do list for a long time get passed into law. Are there any lingering issues that you are particularly worried about coming up in next year's General Assembly?
The funding of our common schools, which are found, that language is constitutional language, our common schools, put in there in the 1898, right? So we've, for over 100 years, committed to this and then invested over $30 billion in education reform. Hal Heiner once disparage that somehow settled getting to the middle of the pack. And of course, we made a combined commitment of money, focused leadership, and communal goodwill. That's how we got there. And now to say we can't get to top tier learning because we've lost our vision or somehow have forgotten how to fund it is what I would say.
Right.
Because our educators in this state do not know how to take us to the next level. Our kids really do brilliantly when given opportunity. They're just remarkable learners, and that's what we need to give them more of, opportunity.
Right.
So funding public education will remain my priority as long as I'm in the legislature.
Mm-hmm. We're both products of the KIRA reforms in public schools, so that's something that, you know, we certainly benefited from and personally would love to see even more investment in schools for kids to get an even better education than we got. So
And let me honor that I know you all went through some of the toughest testing times. So I want to respect that, and we've changed that. But know that out of that came data that's helping us to know where all of the problems lie that we can solve. So you are part of making something possible now if we can find the political will again to back future education reform.
We bailed out before the testing got too crazy. I think when we were there, it was like right at the right level. And it kind of took off after we left. Well, yes. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really great to talk to you. It's been really great to hear from you. And we very much appreciate the perspective you're bringing to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was really a joy. Jasmine, Robert, thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at @myoldkypod. They can like our Facebook page. We post our show notes on Medium, and you can find our podcast on the podcasting app of your choice.
All right. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next week.